Hi babes, I wanted to come to you for a surprise episode today that I hope will reach you and touch your hearts and just to share some thoughts and things around this day that is such a big thing in at least Western capitalist culture. It's a beautiful day today. The sky is blue. We have some sun. Some sun after not having any sun the last couple days. And whenever I go out into the sun, I just feel so loved. Especially after leaving California, where I had sun almost every day of the year, sun coming out after it's been cloudy a couple days just feels like love. It sets my whole body aglow. I just get all happy and like I just feel happy love vibrations and stuff like that. And yeah, it's just, I don't know, my dog Peanut, who I'm going to be talking about a little bit, since this episode's about love, and she, when she gets the sun, she just sits there. She just like closes her eyes and like sits there, and I feel that so hard. So my moon is in Leo, actually. That's part of where this is going to be coming from. This is going to be a lunar Leo's thoughts or lessons on love, if we want to keep with the L's, though I'm not going to say this is a lesson, but yeah. So my moon, or my emotional well-being and how I nurture and what I need to nurture and how I love and things like that, are it's in Leo, and so it makes sense. And Leo is ruled by the sun, so for me it makes sense that like the sun is so key to my emotional well-being, my emotional health. But I think that extends not just to me. I mean, we all have Leo somewhere in our natal charts, so you might check to see where you have Leo. And Leo is associated with the heart, it's associated with love. And it's ruled by the sun. So for me, it really does make sense that the heart space is connected, which is connected to love, is also connected to the sun. Because I just feel so loved when I'm in the sun. I am so excited by the work that queer POC folks are doing around love this Valentine's Day. It's so moving to me, and I'm so excited by all of the things. And so that's one of the reasons I decided to make this episode, was to share some of these reflections and thoughts with you all. So I've saved a couple posts and tweets, and I'll read them to you and then also share some of my thoughts. This first one was sent to me by a past lover who's now a wonderful long-distance friend of sorts. And so I'm going to read it to you. It's by Virginal Vigilante, who is one of my favorite memers. You go follow Virginal Vigilante. I'll tag them in on the Diaspora Babes page. And it goes, "I promise not to treat love as an individuated monogamous exchange. I promise to decouple love from homosocial systems of exchange, patrilineality, transactionality, heteronormativity. I promise not to treat my lover/lovers as possessable objects. I promise to disentangle love from capital, profit, self-interest. I will recognize that love is not mine or yours, but ours, ours to share. I will recognize that love can be unprofitable, unproductive, and poor. I will recognize that love is particular and universal simultaneously. I will recognize that love is the glue of change, of revolution. Once more, I will recognize that love is the glue of change, of revolution. There we go. Isn't that good? That's so good. End quote. Virgil Vigilante always posts multiple things at the same time. And so one of the other things they posted is, this one's a collage piece, so you can go check it out on the gram. There's the collage, and then there's text on the post that asks, "Is your love revolutionary? Unproductive, messy, confusing, asymmetric, chaotic, unscheduled, poor, different, lost, magical, communal, shared, non-possessive, distributed, imperfect, complex." And the text underneath says, "Love differently. May your love be unprofitable, prone to flux, unfuckwithable. May your love be a congress of loving others. May your love be dispersed, cast wide. Let your love trickle up and down without regard for living laws and gravity. Remember, love is primeval, is perplexing, is power." That's pretty fucking bad. I have to save that and write it out and put it on my fucking walls. I don't know. I have so much to like reflect and internalize on all of this, but it's just so, it's so yes, it's so the sort of love that I want to move to, and so, and that I want us all to consider moving towards and consider enshrining and building, rather than just, you know, desperate, like, typical romantic sexual partner love, like, which is wonderful and beautiful, but it's given predominance in our culture in a way that unbalanced. The next thing that I'll read is a tweet by Bunny Michael that they shared on their Instagram. The tweet goes, "The system commercializes romantic love because we are much easier to control in nuclear family units. Platonic love, self-love, love for community, love for chosen family, love for humanity, that is the love that will set us free." With a text that says, "Your open heart is turning me on." Babes, I'm so fucking proud of us. I'm so proud of just the collective us, in the sense that's moving towards this love, because this is some real shit, and I wish this was the stuff that I was told about love when I was growing up. And it's the stuff that I have to tell myself now as I grow and I continue to grow. I go to Emergent Strategy, the book by Adrienne Marie Brown, who I've referenced many times before on this. I quote from page 32 and 33. I've just chosen a couple excerpts. "Among other things, love is an energy of possibility, the possibility of wholeness. I come from a lineage of brave and radical love." And Adrienne Marie Brown says a bit later on page 33, "Tying this sort of love to creating the more just, liberated world we want to see. It has expanded for me over the years as I have come to believe that facts, guilt, and shame are limited motivations for creating change, even though those are the primary forces we use in our organizing work. I suspect that to really transform our society, we will need to make justice one of the most pleasurable experiences we can have. We also have to stop demonizing pleasure. We try to leverage control over the natural world by making our emotions and sensations less reliable than our thoughts, and then burn at the stake anyone who stays attuned to the ways and power of pleasure in the natural world. It's counterproductive. Audre Lorde's essay, The Uses of the Erotic, is foundational writing on the radical act of tuning into pleasure and not settling for less than the erotic sense of wholeness and rightness in one's life. She is my ancestor in the lineage of this particular work and many others. End quote. So that was just excerpts from Adrienne Marie Brown's book, Emergent Strategy, that was called to mind for me when I did this. I'm also sitting at my desk and I see this little altar that I gathered together this last weekend, my orange altar. It's an altar of mostly orange keyed things, so there's some pink and red in there, and it's for the work on creativity and healing and sexuality and sensuality and eroticism that I'm working on healing right now. And on that altar I have the one of my red paintings of a rainbow. I have pictures of tulips sent to me by a lover that are at the red and blue sunset out the window. And I have two best friends in college who are holding each other, and I collaged that with the painting of two lovers, all women of color, by the way, of lovers that I did my senior year, and so it's all collaged together. And I also have a picture of my deceased Auntie Hayat, and she's looking out from behind a pair of curtains. And so for me, all of this is my love. It's this love among queer POC, among women of color, and love from the ancestors. Like, this is the sort of transformational love that I want to call into my, and I want to grow in my life. And I hope that I'm growing with all of you babes. One of the last things that I'll read you is a list of Lanyaru's do's. Jessica Lanyaru is an astrologer and she is incredible. She's Jewish and queer, and she teaches me how to be an adult. And an adult, like, not just in the capitalist sense of, oh, this is how you pay your bills and go to work on time and all of these things that are supposedly markers of maturity under this capitalist system. Lanyaru teaches me about adulthood or maturity in terms of responsibility, I guess, and being responsible for myself. So she has a list of Lanyaru, that's her name, Lanyaru's do's, aka pro tips for love, which I will read to you now. Don't love another at your own expense. Expect as many games as you're willing to play. You set the standards in your life in part by what you're willing to participate in and how you're willing to play. Your boundaries are yours to maintain. Everything that others do is simply them revealing themselves to you. It's your job to listen and respond wisely. No one is supposed to manage your needs for you, and no one is more responsible for your happiness than you are. Love is not a cure-all or a magic bullet. It requires action, work, and openness. Wherever you're at in your life, know that the foundation to your love relationships comes from within. So if you don't love where you're at, start with that all-important relationship first. Those are some real ass principles, y'all. That's end quote, by the way, end quote. That's some real shit. Don't love another person at your own expense. Your boundaries are yours to maintain. Everything that others do is simply them revealing themselves to you, and it's your job to listen and respond wisely. You've got to listen to people when they tell you who they are. You've got to listen to people when they tell you what they do and who they are. People will tell you who they are if you listen. Sometimes you don't want to listen and you want to project what you want them to be onto yourself, or what you wish they could be, or what you wish you could be, or, you know. No one is supposed to manage your needs for you, and no one is more responsible for your happiness than you are. Y'all, that one is huge. And it's crazy because growing up, like, at least I was taught that, you know, you're always looking for another person to make you happy, that is the key standard or the pinnacle in romantic love, is, oh, you make me happy. I'm looking for someone who makes me happy. And this idea that someone else is responsible for your happiness is so destructive, because then you go into relationships and you're wondering, oh, I'm not happy. It must be this other person's fault. This relationship must be bad. And sometimes that's the case, but not always. And I know I've at certain times had to be forced to realize that I was looking to other people to make me happy, and that I was not actually fully taking responsibility for engendering and creating my own happiness and giving myself the things that would make me happy. You can't make someone else happy. You really can't. Yeah. I have a friend, my friend Apurva, who's a Capricorn. She's a baddie. And one of her pet peeves is when people tell her, her romantic partners tell her, oh, you make me happy. And without getting into her personal business, the issue around this, that, and I really resonate with this issue around this, is that when that person stops being happy, they look to you to fix it or blame it on you. And it's because, you know, sometimes we're not taught to be responsible for our own happiness and then blame it on others when we're not happy. And it's just the least productive thing you can do, you know? This sort of queer revolutionary collective anti-capitalist love that I'm trying to get the shape of or the contours of in this is something I'm really investigating in this project that I'm working on right now that's giving me a whole lot of trouble. But in some ways, it's a project that I've been working, or it's a concept or an idea of love that I've been concerned with for years. All my love is like, all my projects are, and photos, so many of them are about this queer woman of color, queer, like, POC love. Like holding each other, this sort of friendship, romantic love that I can't really understand, that gets to something greater. So I have this thing where I fall deeply in love with my female and gender non-conforming friends. Friends is such an interesting word. I mean, I think of them as heart companions more than friends. Not that those are mutually exclusive. And to be honest, I don't know how much of all of this is just the result of heteronormative bullshit, right? Which just tells me that I'm just friends with these people that I'm actually in love with. It's this problem that a lot of queer folks have because we weren't given scripts or images or examples of what queer love looked like when we were younger, what romantic love between women would look like, or between other queer folks would look like. And so, you know, sometimes I'm like, maybe I just label, I put the label of friendship on my crushes to contain and normalize them because of, you know, heteronormative stuff in the world and patriarchal stuff in the world that we live in. And I think maybe part of that is true, but I also think that what I'm feeling and what I'm getting at is more than this. I think that the love I feel among other queer POC folks exists beyond and outside and greater than the language of roles that fit under capitalism and patriarchy, which divides this into couple units and then, you know, satellite friend groups. Because those are, like Bunny Michael says, the most effective way to control us. And as Virgil Vigilante reminds us, like, the most effective ways to extract profit from us. So I don't know what you all think, and I'm hoping that all, you know, this is a question I just have to keep dedicating myself to in my work, but this is the sort of love that I want to center in on Valentine's Day and always in my life, is the sort of transformative, healing, reciprocal love that we give to each other when we are taking full responsibility for ourselves and our fears and our traumas and our past, and we're honest with ourselves and honest with the others, and like, you let people choose whether they want to be with you or not. You don't manipulate them by lying to them or hiding something or not bringing something up because you're afraid that it's not gonna work. And y'all, we do some crazy shit to each other. So, like, you know, this is another thing that I wanted to get into, is some no-nonsense reminders and principles that I, like, guide, I try to use to guide myself and, like, live by and stuff like that when it comes to love. And I just want to remind everyone out there that you are not a dumping ground for anyone else's trauma. And I personally am fucking over people coming to me and thinking that they can just dump all of their pain on me and have me deal with it when they are absolutely doing nothing to take responsibility for what they're going through and how they're hurt and wounded. They're like, I have all this shit, I don't want to deal with it. Well, you, how about you deal with it for me? Let me just say I love you, now deal with this shit. So just as a reminder, love and care are not feelings, they are verbs. All right, let me take that back and remind it, because I just had a conversation with my partner the other day and we talked about this. So I think it's really important to distinguish and talk about the distinctions between love and care as feelings and love and care as verbs. Because you can say you love someone and then go and lie to them and hurt them and beat them and do all sorts of shit. And I'm sorry, for me, that's not love. Like, maybe you can say that's it's just the feeling of love. But that's the sort of thing that for me is fucking worthless. I care about love as the feeling, and love as I want and care about love as a verb. Love as I am loving you, isn't I am being honest with you and upfront and, you know, doing the things that you need, that I need, and being real. That's what love is for me. Love is not like, I love you, and just thinking about it, and it's just saying that, because it's so fucking hollow. It's so hollow. It's like a present. It's like a, you know, giving someone a present like this, like it's like wrapping shit up in wrapping paper and putting a bow on it. That's not fucking love. Like, fuck out of here with that shit. Seriously. And care. I care about you. Saying that you care about someone and then doing things that are so not caring, like being dishonest and, you know, like not being honest with yourself about what you can and can't do, not being honest with yourself about what you need and what you can do and all of these things and where that comes from and how you're hurt. And oh, this is getting me going. This is getting me going. We all have trauma, and we will hurt others unfairly if we're not actively taking responsibility for that and trying to heal. And that doesn't mean going to someone and being like, you know, this person fucked me up in the past, and so now I'm just going to have fucking free rein to treat you like shit and not prioritize you and do all of these things and stuff. And so, okay, yes, you've said it. You've said that, you've been upfront with the fact that you have it. But, like, what I mean by taking responsibility for your trauma doesn't mean just saying it and then expecting the other person to deal with it. It's saying, like, okay, I know that this person hurt me, so I'm afraid of being my whole self in front of someone I love, and I have the deep belief that if I am my true self, that I won't be loved. I have that deep fear. I know that, and that comes from my fucking parents. Like, and so that means that I have to actively notice when I am hiding my feelings and when I'm repressing my feelings around my partner or around my lovers, because, and it has nothing to do with them, because it comes from my past, and I have to know that and recognize and apologize for it and be upfront with it and then do it different. You know, do you see the difference? Or, for example, if you come from like an abusive family or abusive relationship, and so you learn, like, that the people you love will hurt you, and that you need to do everything to placate them, and you learn to fear those who you love. And that came from your past, but you take it into your current relationships by treating the people you're with fear, because you think that they're gonna hurt you. And I mean, again, maybe you're in a relationship where your current partner will be nasty to you, but, you know, in some cases it's just because, like, is what you learned from the past, and that's your trauma, and you need to recognize, oh, I treat my partners with fear and think they're going to hurt me, but that is from the past. And so that means you need to actively, like, be looking at where you lie and gaslight and try to placate someone's emotions because you're afraid of them, not necessarily because they're going to do those things. I hope I'm being clear. These are just things I'm thinking about, and I get really passionate about them. So if none of this, like, resonates with you and you don't like this shit, then throw it out the fucking window. It's fine. But yeah. But it's something that I deeply believe, that even though it's scary, you need to be able to say what you need to recognize when you're acting out of fear or out of love, and to recognize when someone else is acting out of fear and out of love. And I deeply believe that we need to learn to recognize when someone cares more about their own fear and protecting and worshiping their fears than they care about you. Do not be a sacrifice or an offering at the altar of their fear. Is fear a god that you worship? Do you lay yourself, your lovers, your friends, your career, your passions, your art, your happiness to feed the gods of fear? Does your person do that? Does your lover do that? We have a choice every moment to feed the fear. We have a choice every moment to choose fear or not. Your fear is a guide, not your God. Fear will show you what needs healing, where you need love. You know, there's that quotation about courage is not the absence of fear, but the action despite fear, something like that. I think that's a general quotation. I don't know if that comes from anyone in particular. But yeah, we're all fucking terrified in love. Like, we're all fucking terrified. But you don't have to be a shitty person because you're terrified. Right? You can recognize that you're terrified and recognize, oh, why am I scared? Oh, this is why. All right, now that I know that, let me think. What should I do? Yeah, what's in line with my values? This is hard shit. This is some hard shit. So, one of the main things I wanted to share with you all is my thoughts on the Ace of Cups in the tarot. Because the Ace of Cups is one of my favorite cards. I think it's the perfect card to talk about for this occasion. V-Day with you all, babes. Where to start? In the first tarot deck that I bought, it's the Botticelli tarot deck. Botticelli, the Italian early Renaissance painter. And I was pulling cards, trying to get to know the deck, and I was pulling a card for the different relationships in my life. Like, what is my relationship with this person? And I pull a card, and then I was like, what is my relationship with my Peanut? And Peanut's my baby girl doggo. She's a very sweet little dog who's my constant companion. And the card I pulled is the Ace of Cups. And the Ace of Cups, ever since then, for me, has been the card of unconditional love. The image of the Ace of Cups on the Botticelli tarot deck, the one I have, is it's a Madonna and Child sort of archetype. So the God, the Virgin Mary sitting in a garden with trees around her and lilies around her and some flowers and maybe rose petals, it looks like, with a baby on her lap, and she has her hand on her breast and she's about to feed the baby. And I always kind of hated the Virgin Mary when I was a little girl, when I was a kid, because I was just like, oh my God, purity, like, they're just trying to trap us and make us hate ourselves, and it's this unrealistic image of women from created by the patriarchy and all this shit. But I realized later that the Virgin Mary is the remnants of goddess worship that have been, you know, transformed and integrated into patriarchal religion. And so seeing her not just as the Virgin Mary, but as, in the Christian sense, but as the archetypal mother is how I approach the card. So it's a mother who is about to feed her child. And in an ideal world, the mother is a child's conduit to unconditional love. Like, you get to know, the child and the mother get to know unconditional love, get to know about the existence of unconditional love in the universe through the relationship with the child. Now, obviously, that is 100% not true consistently in the world, but that is the archetype that we're working with in this card. That the flow, and it's an imagery that's used all the time with the Virgin Mary, that the flow of breast milk is supposed to be like the divine love. The flow of, and so I think it's so interesting to connect the flow of water that makes up the cup suit, which is about, again, emotions and love and ideas in many ways, to the flow of, like, breast milk. The Ace of Cups in other decks is, in the Rider-Waite deck, it's a hand that's come out of ether with a cup, and that cup is overflowing. And so for me, the image that I have of the Ace of Cups is, it is your connection to the ever-flowing eternal fountain of love that makes up this world. Think about this earth. Water is one of, like, the primary fucking things that runs through, like, every living thing on this earth, right? It's like the love that connects everything that's there. And so when you get the Ace of Cups, it's like you get to take your cup, the vessel of your heart, the vessel of you, and stick it into this fountain of eternal, ever-flowing love in the world. And you get to pull it back and drink from it, and it's overflowing. Like, have you ever done that? Have you ever taken a cup and, like, put it into a fountain or into a sink and had it fill up and watched it overflow? And it's a beautiful experience, and it's the perfect imagery for accessing love for me. And so I thought it was perfect to pull this card for Peanut, for my dog. Because Peanut is, for me, like the embodiment of pure, flowing, eternal, cup overflowing love. My friend Apurva, who I already mentioned, she has a cat that she's very close with that she adopted around the same time that I adopted Peanut. And she told me that she wished she had a pet growing up because she feels like it would have made a huge difference in her life to be able to feel like, as a child, that she always had unconditional love, that it wasn't something that was taken away when someone was mad at you. And I was like, wow, that's so fucking real. If I had had Peanut in the worst times of my life, when I was going through the hardest shit, it would have been so much better, because here is, like, a living, breathing teddy bear who always fucking loves me. Because that exists in the world. You always do have that love. It's just when it's embodied that it's easier for you to feel and to see and to encounter.
Yeah.
She's actually sleeping on my lap as I record this episode right now. So I'm, like, petting her as I record this. So this flowing fountain of love that is the world, is the universe. And the Ace of Cups is you get to access that. That fountain is not external to you. We live in a fractal universe, and so things are like patterns are repeated on small and large levels. And you have that fountain of love, like inside you, inside of yourself. And one of the problems, I think, is that we're always like running to other people to get our love. And it's beautiful to share love with others, but not as a replacement for having that love ourselves and like accessing it in ourselves. So when you're feeling scared or unloved or unlovable, remember that you have that fountain of flowing love inside of you. It's in your heart. It's in your sacral area. It's there. The water is flowing. And maybe that water is underground. Maybe you can't see it and access it. Think of it again as a fountain or a spring, like as, you know, a spring like Zamzam water that popped out of the desert as a sign of divine love for Hagar to feed her crying baby Ismail. That's also the Ace of Cups. So anyway, you have this, but maybe you can't see it. And if you can't access it, it's because fountains can get plugged up. Think of in Spirited Away when Chihiro is having to help cleanse the stink, what they think is the stink monster that has walked into the bathhouse, this bathhouse for the spirits. And there's this supposed stink monster that goes in, and actually it's the river god who has been clogged up by the detritus of capitalism, by garbage, by old rusty things, by discarded consumer items, by pollution and all of that. And it has to do with Miyazaki's environmentalism and stuff like that coming into that film. But again, fountains, rivers can get clogged. And again, if you have that flow of eternal love that's inside you and it's always there, but maybe it's clogged up, maybe it's like all the shit from capitalism and patriarchy and exploitation and trauma and violence. Like, it's like there's a bunch of rocks that are blocking the entrance, or not just rocks, like there's a bunch of shit, there's a bunch of garbage there. And sometimes you need help clearing that away. Like, I'm not saying you need to clear that away by yourself, or that you need to clear it away before like loving anyone else. No, that's not true. Like, you need to get that help to unclear that away. And you can get that help from, hold up, I wrote this down. Y'all, you know I did. I put work into this. You know I put work into this. Hold up, where is it? Yeah, here. You have the fountain of love inside you, and you don't need to go to anyone else to get it. Maybe the fountain has been blocked, caked over with mud and trash and the debris of capitalism and exploitative patriarchy. Or maybe someone's purposefully put a lid on it. Maybe someone purposely tried to hurt you and shit like that. Like, it's true. Sometimes they're like, oh no, this love reminds us of the divinity in the world. We don't want that. We want actually to think that the God is like consumerism and material goods and, you know, the shit that makes rich white men richer. So again, we have to put a plug in this power. It's why, you know, there's so much violence. One of the reasons there's so much violence against like POC and queer POC. And so anyway, like, sometimes you can't clear the fountain away by yourselves, and you need to enlist the help of friends, of lovers, of therapists, of art, of pets. But it is not those people who give you love. That's within you already. Just need help sometimes clearing it away so it can flow. So that's my message. That's my message around the Ace of Cups. In the Sluttest Tarot, the Ace of Cups is a person, a naked person leaning across a sink to kiss themselves in the mirror. That's the Ace of Cups. I want you to know, Diaspora Babe, that you are loved. That you are love, that you carry the love of your ancestors and your unseen guardians and of the goddess, and I want you to feel that love in the sun, in moonlight, when you feed yourself, when you wake up in the morning, when you put on your clothes, when you take a step. Just remember that you have that love and that it's fucking precious, and we're building it together, y'all. We're really building this together. And when the fountains of love inside us form a confluence, we can carve new structures in this world, like the fucking Grand Canyon. That's how powerful the flow of our collective love is. When the tributaries come together into a river and it carves for thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of years, that's the sort of love that we have. Oh, my love, Emma. Hi babes, I'm doing this recording at work, actually on a little break, because I re-listened to what I did earlier and I just wanted to clarify a few things. So this thing about the fountain inside you that, you know, sometimes gets clogged up and stuff, this is really key, because loving others and being loved by others and loving others helps us understand what it means to love ourselves. Like, we don't know what that means to love ourselves a lot of the times, and it's easier to learn what it is with other people sometimes. And again, that's like why, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, you need to like have this fountain flowing and be drinking from it all the time for you to like go like hang out at other people's fountains. This episode ended up being a lot more serious than I wanted it to be. I was hoping it was just gonna be like, yeah, I love you all and we're all gonna love each other into the revolution, yeah, but it's not easy. We can say all of these things we want about accountability and responsibility and loving yourselves is the way to get to the revolution, to the liberated future, but it's real work that has to be done, and it's hard and it's emotional and it takes courage, and we're all kind of like scrambling around in the dark. So yeah, I hope you do something restorative and love you all, like I've said so many times. Tune in on Saturday for the music episode. That's what's coming then. Keep safe. Keep faith. Until Saturday.